Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello.
Welcome to The Climax.
This is our season finale.
It is. It is the end of the series. Well, the end of the season, not the end of the series, hopefully. We are planning to be back for another series.
We are indeed, but Bex is not happy with me because I've just sprayed a lot of
fly spray all over the room. And all the windows are closed.
Obviously,
it's 20 degrees outside, and now the room is full of fly spray.
Yeah, but there's fewer flies.
No, there's the same number of flies, Shelley, because you didn't spray it very well.
Okay.
Anyway, welcome to this very erotic podcast about your sex life
and fly spray.
Luckily, Jelly is better at giving good opinions than she is at killing flies.
I thought you were going to say something completely different. I was like, Bex, has it really come to this season finale? You're sharing my tips. So, what are we talking about today? So, we're doing a sort of end of season...
We're doing a roundup.
A roundup, a recap, a highlight of the best bits.
We're going to talk about the biggest questions that came out of the series. We're going to talk about the things that we've learned. We're going to talk about the questions that maybe still haven't been answered. And we're, as ever, going to have some amazing guests. And we're going to answer some listener questions.
Yeah, and review some toys.
And review some toys.
That is how this show goes.
It is.
What are some of the things that you think we've discussed, like, has come up a lot in conversation during this season?
I think we've talked a lot about, like, confusion and myths. So the things that people believe that aren't accurate. I think the big ones of that have been, like, penis size. People don't love huge penises.
That's
a really important discussion to be having. And also orgasms. We've talked a lot about the fact that women, generally speaking, don't orgasm. I quote a different statistic every week. It's in the high 70s of women who don't orgasm for penetrative sex. And I still meet women to this day who don't know that. So I think, yeah, there's been a lot of, we talked a lot about myths. I think also we talked about stigma. Like, there's still stigma. We talked about promiscuity, having a lot of sex, having not much sex. I think actually I've realised over the course of the last 8 weeks that women basically feel bad about whatever they're doing. Too much sex, guilty. Not enough sex, guilty.
So much shame.
So much shame.
I think one of the things I kind of have realised through the conversations that we've had with women throughout this show is that there is so much more inequality in sex than we think. And we think that we're in this world now where, like, post-feminism and post-Me Too, where everyone's way more, like, woke and awakened to problems. But actually, when it comes to sex, it feels like there's still so far to go. A, in terms of, like, communication and dialogue, like, women not talking about things they're not happy with. And also, in relationships, that it is a bit of a given sometimes that a woman doesn't orgasm, or is a bit of a given that she has to give him head. Whatever it is, there is so much, I feel, that's just not equal. And we've talked to women all different kind of backgrounds and sexuality and all kinds of things, and it just feels like this is quite a norm. Like last week when we had Talani on, who was talking about how black men won't want to date girls that have had lots of sexual partners. And just so much stuff that's just prejudice towards women. And also, hopefully, what this episode will do, as we have experts on the show and we have a counsellor, is unpick some of the things that we've noticed kind of as trends that we've been talking about with women, and perhaps go a little bit deeper into why these things are happening. So look at the psychological elements of why casual sex is going wrong, or why women can't talk about consent, and we can understand a bit more of that.
So the idea of what we've done with this episode is that we've brought in actual experts, because we've had a lot of amazing people on the podcast, but they've mostly been women in their 20s. So we've now got some people who are a bit more sort of technically experienced in the area, in the arena of sex and sexuality, to analyse everything that we've talked about previously. So it's a slightly different discussion, I think, but I'm really excited about it. I think it's going to be a really useful way to round off the season.
Yeah, because as we know now, having a lot of sex doesn't make you an expert in sex.
So joining us today, we have Sarah, who runs an organisation called Scarlet Ladies. And we also have...
We have Julius, who's a counsellor, and he's been a counsellor for many years and a psychotherapist.
And he specifically deals in mostly people in the 20s.
Bye. for this week's episode, we're joined by Sarah from Scarlet Ladies. Thank you so much for joining us. Can you tell us a little bit about the survey that you've done recently and about your work?
Sure. So Scarlet Ladies, I founded together with my now best friend because we felt that we needed a place to talk about sex because it's something that's really not done. And we've done a campaign last year to talk about the importance of why different women might feel the need to talk about sex. And this year we wanted to sort of weigh in on that with actual facts. And we wanted to find out, how do women actually feel about their sexuality? And how comfortable are they to talk about that? And is there a relation to how good they feel about their sexuality in comparison to how comfortable they feel about talking about it? So that's how this campaign and the survey came about.
And what were some of the findings from the survey?
Well, for me, what really stood out was that when we can talk about it, when we can talk about sex, it really makes us feel better about it. So, for example, we found that women who said in the survey that they're really uncomfortable with their sexuality and with sex in general were 10 times more likely to not have anyone that they can talk to about sex, including their partners, which I think is really sad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think that is very sad. I think it's interesting. I wonder whether there's like whether how comfortable you are talking about sex is kind of demographic, because I've always spoken about sex with my friends and always felt very comfortable doing that.
Mm.
And we grew up talking about sex, but then I guess I went to all girls school, so maybe that's part of it.
Yeah, I suppose like different socioeconomic groups maybe talk about it less or more.
Yeah,
depending. I think my guy friends talk about it a lot less, and if they were having. I just know from my boyfriend, like, if we were having sex problems, he wouldn't go and speak to his male friends. I imagine he wouldn't really go speak to anyone. So I wonder also how much that's reflected on the male side, whether there was lots of men who aren't talking to anyone and aren't happy about their sex life.
Yeah. Do you think different types of women are more or less likely to talk about it?
Yes, definitely. I think what the survey has shown is that women in the younger demographic, 25 to 34, are most likely to feel uncomfortable with their sexuality and with having sex. And something that we found at our events is that sort of the younger the women are, the more inauthentic the conversation is. Because very often when people do talk about sex, what you hear is a, sort of more of a bragging conversation rather than a real, true, you know what? This is what happened last night, and either this was really cool or this was really not.
It's really interesting because that's so the opposite of my experience.
It
could not be more different from my experience.
Yeah, that's interesting. So I was going to say that it also, from my kind of friends, that feels very different, because I always feel like we talk about things in a very vulnerable and open way, about things not being good and rather than things being really good.
Yeah.
I actually can't even pull up many memories of my girlfriends coming to me when their sex has been good.
No, I can't imagine one of my friends saying to me, We had incredible sex last night. It just doesn't.
I feel really embarrassed when I say that I had amazing sex. I don't know why. I feel like it does feel quite braggy and quite.
I feel like I don't need. It's like, I wouldn't go and be like, guys, I just had the best haircut, or like, guys, oh my god, you can't believe how clear my skin is right now. Mm. Like, I think I tend to share with my friends when I need support.
Yeah, for sure. We actually have a bit of like a code word in our friendship group, because I realised that my boyfriend and I weren't having as much sex as we used to, and I think I realised it was often because we were coming home and making quite elaborate dinners, and you'd make like an elaborate dinner, it'd take like an hour, and then you'd sit down, and then by the time the whole like meal and everything was over, like, you weren't really in the mood, you're a bit tired from work. So we developed a new system where once a week we have a tray bake and we put something in the oven which cooks itself for an hour, so you just put all, whatever it is, that all the vegetables, the chicken, tray bake, and it's our little code word where we say, oh, we're in the mood for tray bake tonight, which sounds ridiculous, but sometimes you have to make like a bit of a joke out of it.
Yeah.
And all my friends know that this was like a problem, and we sort of solved it in this slow cooking method, so now my friends say like, how's your tray baking or whatever it is, and I ask her, is your tray baking going well?
I think that's so great.
Feel free to take it.
We had a massive problem a couple of years ago, I think it was 2015, where, you remember when Hugo was a thing? Being like that Danish being cozy thing.
Yeah.
Danish,
oh yeah. I always think it's called Hygge.
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 Anyway.
Yeah. Being cozy.
Being cozy. So Marcus and I decided that Hygge, whatever it's called, was really fun. So every single night we'd be like Hygge. Mm-hmm. So we'd like close the curtains, turn the heating up really high, put on fleecy blankets, watch like a Scandi noir crime, and eat loads of highly carbohydratey food. And I realised, I was like, we haven't had sex for like 2 weeks. And he was like, it's all the Hygge. And we looked at each other, just swathed in fat and fleece. And like, this has got to stop.
Hygge
is so bad for your sex life.
Like, are they having sex in Scandinavia? Like, does that happen?
So, real thing, they had to bring in an incentivization program to get people to have kids. I think it was in Norway.
Really?
Because they just weren't having sex. The birth rate was, like, plummeting.
They were just too cozy.
Because of fucking Hygge.
Too cozy, too much porridge.
Yeah, too much cozy. So, yeah.
Too much of a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Back to the survey. Is there anything else interesting beyond tray baits and Hygge? Is there anything else interesting that you found from your research?
What shocked you the most that you found?
Oh, what shocked me the most is that women tend to be comfortable to talk about, or more comfortable to talk about sex and even the use of sex toys. But when it comes to masturbation, which I would say is really quite important, or using sex toys with a partner, they become very uncomfortable. And I wonder if there's still something around us sort of not feeling entitled to our own pleasure. Because I would think masturbation is absolutely vital for a good sex life. Because if I can't touch my own body, if I'm ashamed to touch my own body, then who else gets to touch me?
Mm. Yeah, I think it's interesting. I think that religion has some stuff to do with it in parenting, because I think there's a lot of, if you're taught that things like that are sinful, that's very dangerous.
Mm. And your experiences growing up.
Because there's always this stuff on Mumsnet. I use Mumsnet a lot.
don't have
kids, just love Mumsnet. Where there are parents saying, my daughter or son has started putting their hand down their pants in public. They're like 2 or 3. How do I stop it? And these parents are clearly, like, terrified and panicked and think it's a disaster. And are probably being like, don't do that, that's naughty.
Mm.
Which is so your first experience of putting your hand on your pants, somebody's telling you that's naughty. And actually now there's a big movement to say, that's something we only do in private, that's something you only do on your own, rather than saying stop it. Which I think hopefully will help tackle some of the shame around touching yourself.
Do you think some of our experiences are different because we went to boarding school? Because I don't remember ever having like an opportunity till I was actually 18 to do
Jenny,
it. Like I was...
Everyone else was wanking.
Yeah, I wasn't.
Okay, I just want you to know, I once asked my girlfriends who I was at boarding school with, I was like, is anybody else? Because we were in a dormitory and they were like, yeah, of course everyone was, just really
discreetly. Oh my god, well, like, I'm 27, I've just found this out.
I guarantee you were the only person in your dormitory.
But they would always cut me off because I knew there were two, like, other people in the room, and then I just, that's just a mood killer.
But did you not have the divider thing?
No, my school was properly open.
Well, so when you were 18, you didn't have your own room.
When I was 18, I did, but I think till 16, it was open plan, 8 people in a room. It wasn't horny stuff. It wasn't.
Yeah. No,
toilet break.
I think it's gonna be pretty quick.
Yeah, and also the problem is that if you take too long in the shower, everyone's like, Rebecca's having a wang.
Yeah, or also like they thought you were bulimic. So
yeah,
you were too long
and
in the bathroom.
On some kind of a list.
Yeah, you're on a list.
And they weigh you all the time.
Someone's monitoring you eating.
Totally. It was special.
Mind you, if you come out of the bathroom and they say, oh, are you bulimic? So, no, I just had a wank. That would touch them up. Shut them up.
Yeah.
It would, but then you'd be the girl who had a wank.
Yeah.
And that would.
We weren't allowed electric toothbrushes at my school.
Well, but was that for that exam reason?
Yeah, because you could masturbate with an electric toothbrush.
Yeah, I have heard that.
What?
Yeah.
Well, I think.
Do they know how the clitoris works? I would not have a brush 100%.
Yeah, you
want
a can.
Cover it in sock.
It's totally fine.
Oh, I like the way you think. I was thinking brush it. I was thinking this is not going to happen.
If it's a soft brush, it's really fine.
Oh, I don't think. I'm not sure they put the actual brush.
No, it's fine if you have a really soft one.
They limited the
girls' dental hygiene for fear they might pleasure themselves. That is ridiculous.
Mm. Yeah.
It was a different time.
I actually find that quite enraging, to be honest.
That's why we're making up for lost time now.
Yeah.
Sex podcast, you know. Do you think there's still a big stigma around having sex and women talking about having sex? Do you think we're still not quite there with the conversation?
Yes, there's massive stigma still around that. And I know that from both the results of the survey, as well as we've been running Scarlet Ladies now for going on to 4 years, and we run events every single week and talking with these women, the kind of stuff that we hear over and over and over again, women feeling guilty about experiencing pleasure, feeling shame about, you know, having desires. There's so much that we still struggle with. And I think the fact that we don't really talk about it in that much, and that there is still, I feel like there's still many ways in which women are being shut up about it. And I feel that doesn't help.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think there's still a discomfort about women having too much sex. There are still people who will message me on Twitter being like, it's biologically wrong. Women don't want sex. Women aren't supposed to. It makes you less biologically compatible. And I tried to explain to my on Twitter that the reason that a penis is shaped the way it is to scoop out the semen of your previous mate.
Yes.
To try and give him the best chance of being the one who impregnated you. And this person was very upset by this, told me that it was not the case. But there's a proper, like, study.
There's a lot of people that don't want women to be having good sex, I think.
Yeah.
Especially on the internet.
Yes, well, they don't want to be having sex at all, ideally. But if they are having sex only with one person. But also there's a lot of crossover between that and incels, who are a community of people who are involuntary celibate, who think that they are owed sex and think that women not having sex with them is some sort of crime.
Mm.
But they also don't want women to have too much sex.
Mm.
So you do slightly wonder where that's going to work out. Just an algebra problem.
I just think it's the attitude generally that women's sex lives are like a public thing, like it's up for public discussion.
Yes.
And not a private thing where you're allowed to have as much or as little sex as you want. But it's like, we need to be decided. Similar with contraception as well.
Yes.
It's like, it's decided that the woman, you know, it's a public thing and a guy gets a say. Like, why does a guy get a say?
But in terms of contraception, you're supposed to use none but never get pregnant, except as soon as your fertility starts to tank, you should be pregnant immediately, but only when you are fully able to support it and go back to work straight away.
Mm.
So I love you so much right now.
There's this tiny window where socially you're allowed to.
But they spend the whole of your childhood.
Basically, you are being criticised no matter what.
Mm. Yeah, unless you are financially viable, get pregnant on your 27th birthday, give birth to one very neat child, and then manage to go back to work while still being like a full-time parent. And never complain about it and get really thin afterwards.
Just about be okay.
Yes. Just
about.
You wouldn't want to do too well because then you're intimidating.
No. Well, you can do well, but you have to be very quiet and modest about it.
Yes.
Nobody's allowed to know that you're doing well. But you're also not allowed to complain.
It seems nobody likes to complain.
It's a good system, isn't it? No one likes a whiner.
It's pretty flawless, actually.
Yeah, it really is.
This stereotype that women don't really enjoy sex and that we shouldn't be enjoying it and shouldn't want it is something that really baffles my mind, because we've known since, what, the 50s, 60s, since the biggest...
Kinsey.
Yes. This was the biggest study ever conducted. And
this is the Kinsey report that we're talking about. If you haven't read it, it's very long. But on Wikipedia, they have the highlights.
And basically, they've proven that women have got a higher pleasure potential than men do.
Mm. Yeah.
And yet, there's still people out there that think that, women don't really want sex. Well, I think there's something about women probably don't want mediocre sex. We're getting to a point where, women realize, well, hang on a moment, sex can be for me too. It doesn't have to be me trying to serve my partner, but it can be really awesome for me.
Yeah.
And I think that's the place that we need to get to, because if you're having really good sex,
On the topic of the Kinsey report, I always think that one of the best things it did was, so there's a thing on the Kinsey report where you work out your sexual orientation on a grade of 0 to 6. So instead of gay, straight, bi, and then all the other ones, you give yourself a number. So if you're very, very straight, you are a Kinsey 0. And if you're very, very gay, you're a Kinsey 6. But I really like the idea that you can kind of pick. You can be a sort of 0.5. Or you can be a... Like, you wouldn't have sex with women, but you like to check them out every now and again.
Yeah.
I think it's a much cooler and more fluid way to define your sexuality.
Yeah, fluidity to it.
What would you be? You Kinsey 0? You Kinsey, Kinsey and the 0.1?
It's interesting. Because I'm woke, I really want to say that I'm like a 0.1 or a 0.2, but if I'm honest, I think I am
Kinsey's
I am straight, and I think I've always been straight, and I think I'll always be straight, but that's just as I've always been attracted to men, and I haven't had desires to be with women. But maybe that will be something that changes. But it wasn't where, like, lots of my girlfriends went through a stage, perhaps like at school, or like, I mean, I don't know, or longer or whatever.
That
experimental stage never really happened for me.
Yeah.
But here's hoping maybe one day I'll turn around.
Your sexuality will match the rest of your brand. Yeah.
Well, there's hope, because what we've found is that women that are over 45 value their sexuality a lot more, and they start to explore a lot more, so hang in there.
Yeah, 45.
But also, you can explore without wanting to sleep with women. There are lots of ways to explore.
Yeah, this is true. Yeah, I mean, my best friend's gay, and it was really only after university that she kind of realised that she was interested in women, and she started seeing women, and she was like, ah, okay, like,
that's
this makes
what it
sense.
Was.
And... Mm. But I've realised also, like in the report, that it is very fluid, and she's in a relationship with a woman, and there is still that element that they could go back to the other way, and that is something that underpins their relationship, is that you're never just one thing in one state, and it's a bit of a fear that perhaps one day they'll be like, actually, now I feel straight, or now I want to be with men. Mm. And so it's a different dynamic. I don't think you just find your sexuality and that's it. It's always evolving and changing.
Yeah, I think... Generally speaking, I mean, I find it frustrating when people describe themselves being pansexual, because I feel like surely that... I still don't fully understand why pan is different from bi.
Mm.
Or just saying I thought... But the point of pan is that you fall in love with anybody based on their personality and who they are rather than their gender. And I think, broadly speaking, I would imagine most of us are pansexual in the sense that we all have the capacity to fall in love with anybody, but we all have different traits that we prefer, which tend to present more in male and female people.
Yeah.
And that is tend to be how it kind of works
Definitely.
Out.
Definitely, yeah.
Also, I think we might have a preference for genitalia.
Yeah. Well, so this is a very tricky one, because I'm very strongly pro penis. I love a penis. I really need a penis in my life.
It's a good sound. It's a good
I've been called transphobic before for saying that I wouldn't date a man with a vagina.
Really?
And I don't think that that's transphobic. I think that's that I like penises. But that is apparently a preference that is not or shouldn't be publicly stated. And I find that very frustrating, because I think you're right. Some people do have genitalia preferences. And that is acceptable, surely.
I think that, yes, because that is your sexuality. You mentioned earlier you like to have penis in your life. So why should you deprive yourself of that? What I would consider transphobic is if you didn't want to date a trans man, despite maybe him now having a penis, because he was misgendered at birth, that I would see as transphobic, because you are not accepting him as he is right now.
My thing is, I don't think I would have gone out with somebody who couldn't have children, because I really want children.
And I would find that to me would be a really hard limit.
And I wouldn't call that transphobic, but people would.
But that feels very like I'm not allowed to say it. But if I had known that my husband were unable to have children, I probably wouldn't have been with him, because I knew that I wanted to have my own children biologically with my partner. And I think I would struggle with that with a trans person. Is that... Are you allowed to say that?
I think you're allowed to say that. I think, well... You're famous for saying whatever you want. I think Rebecca Reid is certainly allowed to say that.
And also, I think political correctness, I think, is very important. And I'm really pleased, as much as the older generation calls the millennials snowflakes, I think we have never had such a heightened sense of respect for everybody else's opinions and lifestyles, which I think is a great thing. But it also shouldn't come at a cost of what we want and how we want to live our life. If having children is what you have identified as something you absolutely want in your life, and you don't want this through adoption or through any other means, you want this through having a penis owner in your life that is fertile, who puts a baby in your belly, and this is what you want in your life, then that is your choice and that is your life. And you have autonomy, or should have autonomy, over your own body to make these decisions. I think it only becomes problematic if you then impose that opinion on other people that you should also have children because you do have a womb, you should be dating someone with a penis, they should be putting a baby in your belly, and that's the only way to live your life.
And I think also sometimes that that desire to be with somebody who was born with a penis is like kind of co-opted into a much wider narrative about disliking people and excluding people and I think the problem is because of the behaviour of some transphobic people, it has made conversations that are respectful about trans issues very, very hard to have, because it becomes just a massive screaming from angry transphobes and then reactive trans activists just shouting with none of that nuance in the middle, and that becomes very frustrating. We've been joined by Julius.
My name's Julius. I work as a psychotherapist and counsellor. I have a general practice and do a lot of work, particularly with young people, people in their 20s, let's say, both male and female, who have a lot of issues around anxiety and stress and, if you like, meaning in life and a question of where everything is. So, and I've been doing this for a number of years, quite a long time.
So actually, that would be very interesting just to go back to earlier in this conversation. So Sarah recently spearheaded a study about a young... and one of the things that came out of it that Jelly and I were very surprised by is that young people are apparently uncomfortable talking about sex. Could you just tell Julius the top line?
Yeah, and less comfortable having sex as well. So what we found that women between 25 and 34 who were straight and single were the demographic that were the least comfortable with sex.
This is a huge topic at the moment and a very, very interesting question. And I think there are so many things that actually feed into this, running from societal expectations, background, guilt around sex through historic religion, guilt around bodies, the embarrassment of parents talking about sex or about their own bodies when the children are young, and therefore that's the pattern that develops. And of course, rather tragically, the whole question of possible potential abuse and bullying that we find in schools and in young people. And I think that you talk about women in that age group having particular problems. My own experience sort of shows that a lot of young men have a real problem with sex too, particularly in their 20s, because they don't know what their roles are in life. And it was interesting just listening to you earlier on talking about gender and transphobia. And I think there's a lot there about what do people understand, what do people fear, and where is it all going? Because people do fear the things that they don't understand. And this feeds into everything. And for me, it's not so much about genitalia. It is more about gender and how people see themselves and how they're accepted by others. Although I do take the point that it's biological and personal choice as to whether women want babies and how and so on. And I think it's a very big topic.
So that's really interesting. You're talking about the sort of men in flux in terms of sex. Do you think that the current men in their 20s are better or worse off in their attitudes to sex than previous generations?
I think that they find it more difficult now. I think there are some studies on this, but I think that one of the problems with this is that whether we like it or not, historically, previously, whilst things may not have been right or liberated or particularly good, there are a lot of boundaries. And people had an understanding of where they fitted in with the sort of male stereotype role model, a female stereotype role model. Those role models may be wrong and they may not be where they should be, but they knew where they were. Whereas now, a lot of men don't know whether they're supposed to, just putting it at a very base level, whether they're supposed to hold doors open for women or not.
Find that one second, you know, because you just don't drop a door on someone. Well, you just hold the door open for everyone, surely.
Which is exactly what I do.
That's weird, isn't it?
Well, personally, I think it's weird, but some people have reacted really badly to that type of thing, which I find quite bizarre, because for me it's manners. Yes, apparently.
I don't know anybody who's ever had direct experience of someone being like, how dare you?
We don't have ultra feminist friends. We do have...
I do. I am an ultra-feminist.
Also, I think sometimes it depends on how it's done, because I have been on a few dates with someone quite a while ago who did this thing where he would order me to stay in the car until he would come around and open the door.
Oh, I find that very weird.
In which case, I always felt like saying, fuck you, I have opened my own doors for 30 years, I'm still capable of doing that. So because then it didn't seem like a courteous thing. It was a woman, you sit, I open door.
That's control. Yeah. But that's a question. Exactly. That's a controlling thing, isn't it? And I agree with you. There's a complete difference in role models and control and using that in that way. And just that openness and common courtesy that one would extend to everybody, irrespective of sex or gender.
But in terms of the door thing, I think that the reality, it's not that men are, I think that men are not being confused by actual women turning around saying, how dare you hold that door? I think they're being confused by a media conversation about women don't want doors held open for them anymore. And I think it's a myth that women are going to get angry about that. But whether it's true or not, men are clearly still being affected by it.
There is there is that societal feeling that's around about how do these young men behave around women, and maybe it's the same with women. How do young women behave around men? I think there may be some parallels.
I don't think it's changed that much. I think the rules have always been try not to get raped.
I totally get that.
Yeah, but the majority of the way that women are taught to interact with men is don't get raped. That is literally it.
I do feel like we've talked a big game about like sex in a post Me Too world and how everything's changed and everything's got more sanitized. But I don't know that that's from a female side. I don't know. I haven't really heard my female friends wanting guys to be a bit more cautious, like in the way that they approach them in a bar. I think it's more from a male side that they're now more afraid and they're more anxious about how they go up to women and stuff.
They're being made afraid by a machine that doesn't want them to behave well. The reality is the vast majority of people know how to behave politely. Going up to somebody in a bar and saying, you look really nice tonight, can I buy you a drink? It's not offensive. Going up to a girl in a bar and saying, I want to fuck you, is rude. And most people know how to not be rude. And I think that men are being bombarded with these messages about, you might go to prison if you give the wrong compliment, when the reality is, that's never going to happen.
Yeah.
But if you grab somebody's arse on the street, yes, you might get in trouble.
Yeah, they've made consent so scary.
Yeah.
And also it means that no one really knows how to talk about it.
But I'm just so deeply sceptical that anybody who is moderately educated and has a sort of, you know, average IQ would really not know whether it was okay or not to stick your hand up someone's skirt in a club.
I think you're absolutely right. But I think that there is some added confusion here. With the advent and the availability freely of pornography. Because I think a lot of people are, as particularly young men, and some boys at the age of 10, are watching this stuff.
I was 11 the first time I saw porn.
Okay, you were 11. And it's almost normalising violence. And, well, obviously there are various grades of pornography, but I think that some of the stuff that these people are seeing, it almost normalises women as being sex objects who like this sort of stuff.
And lots of women do. So,
in a context of a loving relationship, perhaps.
Oh, no, not necessarily. On one night stand, but you've consented to it. And the difference. So my husband was telling me on the weekend, apparently when he was a child, so my husband is 11 years older than me, when he was a child, it was a really exciting day in their teens if they found porn in a bush. And apparently this is a real thing that used to happen. Men used to buy porn magazines and then obviously didn't want to take them home to their marriage or whatever, so shove it in a bush. And then teenage boys would find the porn in the bush and it would be like a really great day. And some of my other male friends are like, yeah, I remember that. Like, I'm asking our producer, Van, have you ever heard of this? Yeah, he's nodding. Finding porn in a bush is a thing that happens with boys. So that was like exciting, titillating. It's a magazine and it's a great day because you've seen some boobs and maybe a labia, but it's exciting and it's on paper. 10 years later, my husband and I are not, 10 years is not a huge age gap, but if I'd seen a porn mag in a bush, I would have been like, meh, because I knew that I could get thousands of gigabytes of hardcore gangbangs at the click of a finger. Yeah. I wouldn't have bothered to pick the porn up.
It's so accessible.
That's absolutely the difference.
And I was always, I've always been interested in BDSM. That was sort of a pre-sexual fascination for me. I always knew I was kinky. But I used to meet men who were in their 60s and had only worked out that they wanted to do spanking in their 50s. And I'd been able to find communities of people who went to spanking from the age of 14. Obviously, I couldn't join them because that would have been very wrong. But I knew it was there. And then I think the same thing for any other niche fetishes. You can see that there is a world for you if you need it. Which has made a lot of people feel a lot less alone, but it's also made really, really kinky sex very normal, which is why our friends end up going on Tinder dates where guys try to slap them or spit in their face or choke them, which if you're not expecting it and you haven't negotiated, is quite frightening.
Yeah.
I think when it comes to pornography, I think you're mentioning something there that I think is a great upside. And also not having to go into a DVD store, into this CD area, in order to enjoy it. You know, now you can just go online, nobody needs to know about it. So you have access to it a lot more freely. I think where it becomes problematic is because in this country, and possibly every country, we just lack good sex education.
Mm. Totally.
To put it in context.
Because what we learn is how to or how not to make a baby. So what we learn is reproduction, not sexuality. We don't learn about pleasure. We don't learn about consent.
Yeah.
So when we see pornography and we don't understand that, just like Hollywood movies, they depict a fantasy. They do not show real life. And neither are they meant to.
Yeah.
If you enjoy anal sex and you get a bit of chocolate on your dick, that's how it works. But you would never see that in pornography. It is sanitized in a way. Any conversation around consent beforehand would be, you know, wouldn't be very entertaining to have on camera. But so all of that is cut out.
So it also, the quality of it used to be that if you wanted porn, you had to pay for it, which meant the quality was higher. So there's some there's a provider called Kink.com who make kinky porn, and at the end they make very, very violent videos, and then at the end they have an interview where the girls have like gone, had a shower, and they're sitting, all the actors sit together, and they have like a 5-minute chat about the experience of filming it, and like it's like the behind the scenes. So you see them being restored to equality with the male actor who was probably like hitting them or whatever before, and that comes at the end. So it's provided in a context. Now when those films are cut to put on free porn sites like YouPorn, that is removed. So even the actors are not paying for it. Yeah.
So the 13-year-olds, what are they more likely to access?
Well, they're not going to take a subscription.
Exactly. So that's why I think it becomes damaging, and that's why. You know, there was Toby Orenstein has done a fantastic TEDx talk about this, where she talks about intimate injustice, where they went around college campuses in the US and they were asking young people about what good sex is. And for the boys, it was for having an orgasm. For the girls, it was for it not being painful.
Yeah.
That's a pretty low bar. Mm. And I think that's because the boys, and there was a program here in the UK, I think it was called Sex in Schools, where one of the boys in the classroom said, oh yeah, and then I fuck her and then I come in her face. And he was challenged for that. So what if she doesn't want that? Well, she agreed to having sex with me, so I come on her face. That's what they do in porn. This is how it works. Like, actually, no, you need to get consent for that. And they don't learn that. They're being shown something different and they're not taught differently.
But they're not, and actually there's a technical reason for the coming on the face thing. I think it's that when they started making porn, the way the lighting worked, it wasn't easy enough. You couldn't pick up semen when it was leaving somebody's body or even on their torso because of the lighting. So whereas if you do it on someone's face, they can point their face up to the light.
Wow.
So boys are having sex in a specific, well, we're both having sex, but boys have been taught to have sex in a specific way purely because somebody's cameraman couldn't get the right angle and it became a trend.
So that is terrifying.
Wow.
But isn't it what you're saying about sex education at schools, and you're absolutely picking that up correctly. But the other thing that they really don't focus on in the whole of this is not only the consent issue, but also the whole thing around the emotions that go with relationships. What does it actually mean? Mm. What should the parties be exploring? What should they be doing? And of course, it doesn't need to. You're right. It doesn't need to be in a loving relationship necessarily. It can be sex for sex sake, one night stand.
Of course. But you're allowed
of course.
To. But both of those things, you can have. I think what I see a lot of is the understanding that you have feelings, feelingsy sex in a relationship, or no feelingsy sex on a one night stand. But nobody ever talks about the fact that you might have some feelings.
That's exactly it. And I think a lot of what you're talking about here is the whole issue of communication. Communication between the parties, whether it's the boy, girl, girl, whatever, or groups, whatever it is. It's that whole thing around communication. What is the understanding? What's permitted? And what are the safe bounds? And what is the signal? Say no more.
But I think part of the problem also is that couples, as in sexual partners for one night or a couple of nights, if you meet on Tinder or you meet in a bar or whatever, and you know that it's a short-term, temporary thing, there's almost this understanding that you don't owe each other any kind of communication.
Mm.
And actually, I think you still do.
Yeah.
If nothing else, just to be sure of consent.
Mm.
But isn't that actually a fundamental part of human relationship?
Mm.
The whole thing about the whole thing around communication. And that's not isolated to the sexual encounters. It's every part of life. It's holding the door open. It's the one night stand. It's a relationship that's going somewhere. It's having a coffee with somebody. It's all about communication.
Mm.
Sure, the nature of it's different.
Yeah.
And the impact may be different, but it is about talking and openness and knowing what is permitted and what isn't. Mm. And having that consent.
Yeah. We were talking earlier, or I was sharing earlier, about how important I think it is that we talk. And
yes.
What we find at our events, that we want to give women a space where they can talk. And every now and then we have someone asking, why don't you include men in that conversation? And the answer is very simple, which is a lot of women are not comfortable to talk about sex, period. So they need a space to be provided where they can explore that first. And it's almost like a test run. So within our community, they start talking about sex, and we encourage those conversations by getting different speakers in, by opening up that conversation, and then they can build their confidence in having those conversations. For some of them, they've never even uttered the word masturbation.
Mm.
And
it's a confidence thing. I think having men around just changes the dynamic. It changes the energy.
Absolutely.
It's. I just wanted to touch on it because it's something that's come up. This is the last episode of this season, and we've talked a lot this season. It's come up in conversation a lot about casual sex and about one night stands. And the feeling that I've got, I don't know if Bex, you feel the same, is that as much as we'd like to think that one night stands and casual sex are all fun and games and they're really they're fun and they're enjoyable for everyone, actually they're a lot more complicated than we let on. And especially for women, casual sex is perhaps not as straightforward, and a lot of the kind of horror stories that we've heard throughout the season have been from incidents of casual sex where, and it's obviously just from casual sex, the communication isn't there. Do you feel like we're having more casual sex than ever, and do you think that is having like a knock-on onto mental health and also onto relationships between the sexes?
I think the first thing that I would say on that is that casual sex can hit very deep in terms of people's psychological makeup.
Mm.
And there are things that can go on in those types of relationships that can really hit earlier traumas, earlier experiences of life, things around security, insecurity, things around abuse and so on. So there's a real danger that people can actually be more and more damaged through going through more and more casual sex, seeking to find love, but actually becoming more and more damaged in the process. I'm saying that from a psychotherapeutic point of view,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to the sort of practical things, which I'm sure Sarah will
mm-hmm.
talk a bit more about.
Even from the practical side, I would completely agree. And one thing that one of the most annoying myths that keeps staying around is that sexual empowerment equals sleeping around.
Mm.
And it absolutely does not mean that at all. Sexual empowerment means that you know your own desires, you know what you want, you've got your boundaries in place. And I think very often when we talk about sex positivity, people think, oh, I want to be all sex positive, so I'm going to go and sleep around. But they haven't done the work on themselves.
Mm.
They don't yet know what they want. They don't really know what they are game for.
Mm.
They don't have their boundaries in place. They're not comfortable communicating. So if they bump into someone who's just really up for it and then they want to do things that the other person doesn't want to do, they don't have the tools to say, actually, you know what, this is sort of really not what I want. And that's how they then get themselves into situations, and they just go with it potentially, because also they don't want to disappoint, they don't want to, you know, want to be seen in a certain way, so they just go with it. And sometimes there is that expectation, right? There has been a really great article written by Frankie Cookney about sex positivity and people almost using that against someone. Is that, what do you mean you don't do anal? You're sex positive.
Mm.
Yeah, that's how I know that for me that's an exit only and I might not enjoy that. And you are okay to say no to things as much as you can say yes to things.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, I think casual sex can be fantastic, and I think for some people sex actually genuinely isn't a big deal, and they can have quite a lot of casual sex and it'll be fine. for other people, casual sex can be very hurtful. I think really it depends what you're trying to get out of it. If you want interesting life experiences, to see the inside of various different London rental homes and to see things, experience things, great. If you're trying to fuck your way to a meaningful relationship through sex had at 3 a.m. after half a line of Mandy, it's not going to happen. So I think it really depends what you want to get out of it. I think the real thing is being honest with yourself about what you're trying to get out of
it. That's my issue with it. I have a friend in particular who has had a lot of casual sex over the last few years, and she's not happy, and I know deep down it's because she wants a boyfriend, and the casual sex is just something that she's doing, she's kind of hoping that it'll come out of it. And if she was being really honest with herself, it's not fulfilling her, and it's making her quite sad, because it's not the box that she actually wants to tick, but she's just, you know, you fall into these holes with Tinder, and then that's what it is. So I think you're right, doing the work on yourself to understand if you're strong enough, like mentally, to actually, and then fine.
I think, can I just pick up on that? Mentally, yes. But also, I think there's often a self-worth issue with this. And so that's about, and you've touched on it already, about working with the self to understand one's own issues, to become confident in oneself, and then to be in a positional strength to make those choices. Because if we're looking for love and validation out there because we feel rubbish within ourselves, it's not going to happen. It's just going to make us worse and worse. But of course, you're right. This is a big, big picture, and there are many people who have a wonderful time and are very happy and do it through choice. Others are dragged into it because they feel they have no choice, and others want to find a boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever it may be, and think that's the way to it. And usually doesn't work.
And there might be the occasional unicorn for whom it does work.
There is an occasional unicorn.
Yeah.
There really is.
But I think the vast majority of people I know who are in relationships with somebody they really love and are in a sort of healthy relationship with didn't meet them through consecutive many, many, many one-night stands. Or when they did, they knew very quickly. And both those people were very open about their feelings to start with. I think the problem I have with one-night stands is I watch people I love going on these one-night stands over and over and over again, where any kind of communication afterwards is considered being clingy. And that is what I find really... It's actually not the sex. It's the fact that the person afterwards doesn't even want to go for a cup of coffee. Not to become husband and wife, just purely because you are two people who have shared an experience. I think that's really frustrating.
But I think that people just need to be really honest with themselves about what it is they want. Because if it is a one-night stand, I think the appeal there is that I don't know you from Adam. I'll never have to see you again. So I don't have to worry about what you think about me, and I can just go for it. Personally, I've gone through a period of time where I did have casual sex, but with more what I would call fuck buddies. So it was a regular thing because I had a couple of one-night stands and they just weren't worth my time. Because where he knew he would never see me again, he couldn't be bothered. Nobody's like receptive.
Most one-night stands are the worst sex you're ever going to have because you're not talking.
But
you're
if it's something regular, you can have a really good sexual relationship with someone without having a view of being in a relationship.
If but you're in the place mentally to detach your feelings a bit, though.
And that's my point. You have to know what it is you are after. And also, I think you don't have to assign yourself to something for the rest of your life. If that is right for you right now, like for me, that was a phase. Now I've been abstinent for 2 years because that's what is right for me right now. I'm just not interested in all of that malarkey right now. Maybe because I talk about sex all day these days. I'm like, I don't have to have it
anymore. It's
like
working in a chocolate factory.
Yeah.
Yes.
Done with it. Can't look at the stuff.
I don't think I would ever stop eating chocolate.
Nor would I. Especially dark chocolate.
Well, on that note...
Thank you so much
for your expertise.
That's fantastic.
Yes. If people would like to find out more about you or hire your services, where can they find out about it online?
Well, my website address is www.talktherapylondon.com. And that's got all my contact details.
Fab.
And if they'd like to come along to a talk?
Well, they can find us on scarletladiesuk.com. And across all social media networks, we're Scarlet Ladies UK, and we have events going on every single week, always on a Tuesday evening, so they can come along to that and just look out for more information about the survey. You can find under hashtag Talk Sex Change Lives.
Fantastic. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you. Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
This week's episode of The Climax is brought to you in association with Love Honey, the UK's most popular online shop for buying adult toys and lingerie. Whether you're looking for a toy for you and your partner, something for solo play, or some sexy new lingerie, you'll find everything you need at Love Honey. From 50 Shades of Grey inspired bondage kits to Happy Rabbits, Love Honey has it all. For more information and to discover the fun for yourself, visit www.lovehoney.co.uk. What's more, we've got an exclusive discount for The Climax listeners. Visit lovehoney.co.uk/theclimax to get 15% off.
So, we are now going to talk about our favourite toys that we tried all season. Mm-hmm. And because we are such good, altruistic, kind people, we've tried a lot of sex toys.
Well, it's a tough gig, but you know, someone's got to do it.
So, Giles, what are your two favourite toys that you've tried this season?
So, there are two standouts for me. The first one would be the Sona Cruise by Lilo, which is available on Love Honey. I loved it. Don't think I've tried a sex toy quite like it. I feel like so many sex toy brands talk a big game about tech and it being really revolutionary and really different. The Sona Cruise for me was so different. Like, it wasn't something I'd ever felt or experienced before, and the orgasm I had from it was totally different. So I really liked that. I do think, like you said when we talked about that product, that it is something you have to be mindful of, that you could easily take that and not use any other toy again. And it is quite an addictive sex toy because it just feels so good and so different. So I have been a bit mindful of that, of trying to like mix it up.
It's a special treats toy.
Yes. Not one for every day. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not your Nike trainers. It's your like nice boots.
I was actually going to say the Sona was my favourite.
Really?
As well.
Sorry, did I steal it from
you? You stole it from me. It is. It genuinely is quite revolutionary. But as you said, I was quite tempted to make it my like standard go-to, but that could be a little bit dangerous because it's a very, very different sensation from sex. A lot of sex toys mimic what you can do with another person, whereas the Sona does something that a human couldn't achieve.
Yeah.
So you want to use it mindfully and you want to use it carefully. So I would also give like a highly commended to the Aura, which is a Lilo product also available on Love Honey, which is the one that has kind of like a bead inside it that moves around in circles to sort of mimic oral sex.
Does it feel like oral sex?
Doesn't feel like oral sex, but it's similar. It's a similar sensation and it's really nice. I mean, what else can you say about a sex toy, really? It was really nice.
It felt really good.
What would your second place be given to?
Oh, I think one of the Happy Rabbits by Love Honey. Mm-hmm. So we tried a couple of them. They have a G-spot one and a thrusting one. And you tried the one which kind of goes in everywhere.
Yeah, the butt one.
The butt one. I liked the G-spot one. I thought it was a good solid sex toy. It was fun. It was easy to use. It had a good amount of variety to it. And it was just one that I'd recommend if you're like looking to move away from just vibrators and you're a bit bored of just like the kind of clit focused sex toys. Like, I liked the Happy Rabbits, and there's also a lot of science and tech behind them. They've been working on them behind the scenes for a number of years to create this product, and you can kind of feel that it does feel like quite a special product.
I think also they put a lot of thought into the vibration patterns. They're very smart about what they can do. All the settings are quite different from each other and they all achieve different things. Mm. So most people will be able to find a setting they really enjoyed on one of the Happy Rabbits.
Mm. What was your number two?
I think my second favourite will probably actually be the pinwheel from Love Honey. Because Love Honey do such great like BDSM basics. Like, they're not hugely expensive. They're really well made. They're very reliable. And that's something I really appreciate about the fact that you don't have to go to like a specialist outlet anymore and spend loads of money if you want to have slightly kinkier sex. You can get it for a really, really decent price for a great quality on Love Honey, which is
one of the things I really like about Love Honey, one of the reasons I'm really glad we partnered with them and Lilo over the series.
Fantastic. Well, if you guys are interested in any of those products, we have an exclusive discount code for our listeners. If you go to lovehoney.co.uk/theclimax, you get 15% off.
You do indeed.
And you can thank us later. So this week's episode of The Climax, we are talking about sex in the 21st century, and we've been sent some questions by our listeners this week. So I'm very pleased to be talking with Katrina. Please can you introduce yourself, tell us a little about yourself.
Hi, nice to meet you. I'm Katerina. I'm full name Katerina Georgiou. I'm a counsellor working with clients in London, both in private practice and in a GP surgery once a week. Yep, that's me.
And you're going to be helping us out with some of the questions that our listeners have sent in. Yeah. So, first one we've got is from... I'm not going to read her name out, that would be really bad. But she says, my boyfriend doesn't orgasm. He gets hard and he enjoys sex, but he just doesn't seem to ejaculate. Is it something wrong with me, and is it a problem?
So one of my initial thoughts as I was hearing that was about the idea of whose fault it seems to be. Like, she seems to mention, is it me, is it him? And one thing I would suggest is not looking at it so much as who is at fault, but considering how this is something between the two of them, it's both of their issues in a way, and how they can support each other to understand each other's feelings around it. So whatever she might be feeling in response to him not being able to orgasm, first of all noticing how she feels about herself from that, and maybe encouraging a conversation with him about how he feels about it also, and getting the two of them to have a conversation.
Yeah, I think my first sort of thing would be, I guess I would want to know, has he always not orgasmed, or is it that he doesn't come with her?
Mm.
Because if there are like physiological reasons that people can't orgasm, like having too tight of a foreskin or all kinds of other issues, if it was that, I think I could totally understand it. If he had always been able to orgasm with other girlfriends and then was struggling with me, I would find that probably a bit worrying.
Yeah. It's interesting what you said about how she feels when he doesn't orgasm, because that's whenever I've had experiences with perhaps with a guy who like couldn't get it up, or we like had something that was like sexually perhaps like a bit awkward and not quite what you're expecting, I always took it on myself.
Yeah.
And I always felt bad, I always felt insecure afterwards. And it's so funny, because I think if it was the other way around, I don't know that a guy would be super concerned perhaps about whether or not it was something he was doing, just like, oh, that's her.
Mm.
And I think that sensitivity on the female side is very common.
Yeah.
It is, I mean, one thing I can say, like, from both, from when you're mentioning if it was on the other way around, I do have experience with clients where that does happen the other way around. And I think you're right that sometimes there can be two things going on. Like, I think the person who has the issue can feel something and not recognise that the other partner might be feeling a certain way in response as well. And likewise, the other way around. Like, there can be, I think a lot of it is a miscommunication sometimes between mm-hmm. the two around what they're really feeling, what they fear, what they're worried about, how they're being perceived, what they want from it, and how to work together with it. I think there's something about the togetherness that sometimes is missing.
I think women very often have a propensity to take on a fault either way. So if they can't orgasm, they feel it's their fault because their body doesn't work, or they're not relaxed enough, or they're not enough into sex. And if their partner doesn't orgasm, they think it's because they're not sexy enough or they're not doing it right. But either way, women tend to take on blame.
So I think it's something about naming. So first of all, recognising what she's feeling in response to it first, and really starting to unpick some of that. So where's it actually coming from? Is it from a history of this happening? Is it because she's used to feeling like she can always... You know, whenever she's been with someone, it's always worked and this is different. Like, really starting to notice what it is about the issue that's affecting her, and then being able to name it with her partner and actually bringing it up and saying, you know, I'm aware that this is happening, this is how I'm impacted, I'm curious to know how it's impacting you and how we can talk about it together.
I think also, if I were her, I would be inclined to find out whether it's just penetrative sex versus a problem. So does he orgasm from hand jobs or oral sex, in which case it's and find out whether it is specific to penetration or whether it is an overall thing, because that would be interesting. And also, I guess that the part of the conversation is whether there's a kind of an element of like trauma there.
Mm.
I know that some people who have been in an accidental pregnancy situation really struggle with ejaculation afterwards, because that's a kind of trauma.
Yeah, that's like a mental block on it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think she needs to just. I think absolutely she should be finding out why, but I think she should expect that there might be a deep reason why, and I think maybe only ask if you're willing to really listen.
Mm.
If she's not that keen on this guy, and she kind of could take him or leave him, it's quite a big thing to go into.
Yeah, like ask yourself whether or not you're ready to hear the answer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Amazing. So I have another question that was sent in by one of our listeners, and she said, my boyfriend has started to make comments about my clothing and appearance, such as he doesn't like what I'm wearing. It's really getting me down, and I don't know what's the best way forward. How do I talk to him about this? I feel like it's affecting our sex life too. Presumably it's affecting her sex life, because I suppose maybe affecting her confidence in the relationship, or, you know, bringing up insecurities in the relationship. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, so there's this thing on Mumsnet, whenever somebody writes anything about their husband, people just comment LTB, which stands for leave the bastard. And I try not to always give break up with them as the answer, but on that case I would be inclined to say break up with them.
Mm.
I think people are telling you they don't like what you're wearing or how you look, that is such a massive red flag.
Mm.
And I would be inclined, you know, at the beginning of a horror film when like something, when the cup just moves a little bit, you're like, move house, just move house. That's my instinct with relationship things.
Like it's that. Also can be such a slippery slope, like first it's your clothes and it's your parents, and then it's something else, and then it's like how you are around your friends, or yeah, whether or not you're seeing your friends. And I've seen it happen with friends where it just starts with something quite minor and it can develop. But that said I did have a friend at university whose boyfriend made quite specific comments about her clothing, and she did manage to nip it in the bud. So I depends how far along in a relationship you are as well. Like, they were quite early days and she was like, I just don't like this as behaviour, and he did stop. So maybe it's not an awareness sometimes, I don't know.
So my thoughts are around empowering herself to allow herself to be angry and frustrated and notice those feelings. I'd be thinking about other ways in which she might be feeling undermined, other ways in which she might be modifying her behaviour. How often does she say sorry for things? And just take a look at that and notice how she actually allows herself to diminish herself and become more empowered to sort of feel annoyed about that. Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. That's a good mark of things, like saying how often she's saying sorry. That's quite it's quite a simple way of just measuring how you're doing in your relationship and if you are apologizing a lot.
Yeah,
that's good, because so often these things I think can slip without you even really noticing, that it's just one thing and then it's something else, and then before you know it, you're in a relationship that's hard to leave.
Yeah, and I think actually any relationship where you feel that leaving would be frightening, other than for the reason that you would miss that person or be unhappy, that's a very bad sign.
Mm.
I think, broadly speaking, you should not be feeling any fear in a relationship, which sounds obvious, but in lots of cases aren't. I think any situation in which you're nervous about your partner's reaction to something is quite a bad one to be in.
Yeah.
It's fine to be a little bit like, oh, how are they going to take this? But I think to be actually frightened of telling somebody anything is very, very worrying.
Mm, that's not a healthy sign, for sure. Well, thank you so much for sharing your insights. If people would like to find out more about you and your services, where can they find?
Sure, so you can either find me on the counselling directory, which is counselling-directory.org.uk, or you can find me directly at kgcounsellor.com, or on my podcast, which is soundeffects.podbean.com, but it's sound effects with an A. Yeah, that's music and mental health. But yeah, if you find me on my website, you can email me and get in contact, or just a general Google search with my name will work.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Yeah.
Gels, it's the end of our last episode of the first ever series, The Climax.
An end of an era.
It is the end of a very brief era, 8 weeks.
Is it allowed to be an era if it's only 6 weeks?
It's a very good question.
We'll be back with season two to tell you the answer to that. No, seriously, if you've enjoyed this season, please subscribe.
Please leave us a review. We love reviews.
Rate, review, tell your friends, tell your boyfriend. You know, more good sex for everyone, basically.
But also, as we've been very clear, we only want praise, no criticism.
Yeah. And we'll be back soon with a second season, and we'll be discussing lots of different new topics all around sex and sexuality.
But in the meantime, please use the discount code that we offered you, which is if you go to www.lovehoney.co.uk/theclimax, you get 15% off. Buy toys, have good sex, complain if you're not coming. Any other messages for people to take away from this?
Talk about consent more.
Yes.
Yeah. And know your boundaries. That is our message.
This has been a Candy Store production, hosted by Angelica Malin and Rebecca Reed, produced by Van Connor. Sex with OS by Mobile Steam Unit appears under Creative Commons 3.0. Visit Candy Store Productions at candystoreproductions.co.uk.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.